We all come from different cultures. We all negotiate in a different way. We all trust each other in a different way. So having that real deep understanding of how Chinese people do purchase property from a psychological point of view, from just a negotiation point of view, there's a whole lot of things around saving face. I think that really helps. And if you do the wrong thing, well, then the relationship's done and dusted. But if you do the right thing, it's there forever.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Kylie Dulhunty.
Hey everyone, it's Kylie Dulhunty here. My guest today is an agent that's going places. With an extensive background in sales and marketing, including roles in major pharmaceuticals and telecommunication companies in Sydney and Beijing, they bring a wealth of experience to one of Sydney's growing real estate markets. Fluent in Mandarin, they've set numerous sales records by leveraging their strong connections in China and combining that with a deep understanding of the local community. Known for her transparent and straightforward approach to real estate, they've also just opened a Rain and Horn office in Hunters Hill. Emma Tellen, welcome to Elevate.
Hi, Kylie. Thanks for having me on the program.
You're very welcome. We recently did a story about you opening up your office. So I just wanted to, that sparked an idea to get you on the podcast, and here you are. But for people that don't know your name as yet, and I'm sure they will, can you just run us through a little bit of your background?
Yeah, well, I'm not the usual real estate agent that left school at 17 or 18 and got straight into real estate at a very young age. I had a bit of a different journey. So I did a business degree majoring in marketing. I went into a sales and marketing graduate role straight out of university for Singtel Optus. And then after doing quite a few roles there, I transitioned into the pharmaceutical industry, working for big multinational companies like Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Bristol Myers Squibb, Merck. That led me to working in Sydney, Melbourne and Beijing. And I studied Mandarin at a university in Beijing. And then I was also working at the same time in Beijing. And I thought, I'm going to get my real estate license when I get back to Australia. So I did that. And I had my own business at the same time, importing products from China. And I just thought that I had a really good fit with the sales and marketing background. And I love selling and I love helping people buy property. And I've always been obsessed with property. So it was just a bit of a mix of passion and skill set and changing career paths later in life.
Yeah, incredible. And how long ago did you get your license? When did you become an agent officially?
Oh, I think I started my license in 2015, and it's not something that takes a long time to do, to be honest. It's not like a four-year degree.
No, not like back at uni in the old days where you're studying for 20-odd hours a week. But okay, so you got your start in real estate, and where did you first work in terms of the suburbs you were in and where you were selling?
Well, I live in Hunters Hill, and I'm fourth generation born and bred. But when I first finished my license, I had this idea that I wanted to work in the eastern suburbs because just so many fabulous houses there and it's a really dynamic market. So I worked for Rain and Horn in Potts Point and I did that for a period of time. And then I thought, you know, this is crazy. I live in Hunters Hill. I live and breathe it. My parents, my grandparents, all my siblings, everyone's lived here. We're really ingrained in the community. So why am I driving to Potts Point at 7 in the morning? Doesn't make any sense. So I made the decision to work in my local area and sell in my local area. And it's probably been a really wise decision.
Yeah, amazing. And I guess with having that family connection and having lived there for so long, there's probably not much you don't know about the area.
Yeah. I mean, even it's interesting because I'll talk to my mum about a property that I'm selling and I'll say, oh, you know, it was a parent at the schools. And she'll say, oh, yeah, I used to go and play at that house. So my daughter's playing there. I'm dropping her off and my mum used to play there. So yeah, that's three generations.
I imagine that helps you open some doors, but also for the vendors to feel really comfortable with you, given that you live in the area and you know the properties as well.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing of comfort for them as well is they know that I've got their best interests at heart and I'm not going to do anything to ruin my reputation in the area I live and breathe. So that gives them comfort knowing that I'm not going to do the wrong thing by them. I'm going to give them the best service I can and they can trust me 100%.
Yeah, it could be a bit difficult at the supermarket if you didn't do that, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
But look, Hunters Hill is pretty popular at the moment. There's some other new offices that have recently been announced that are coming. What do you think makes it, I guess, right for new agents to be coming in?
Look, I just think it's the best suburb in the whole world. I enjoyed living in China. I loved living in Beijing, but I knew I was always going to come back to Hunters Hill. And I think the thing that really sells the area is it's Sydney's oldest garden suburb. A lot of people don't realise that. So we've got beautiful, beautiful peninsula, water views from a lot of the properties, beautiful old trees, a real sense of community. There's a lot of sandstone from the original Italians and French that moved to Hunters Hill. And I think that it just makes it a really special, unique suburb in Sydney. So why wouldn't you want to open up an office here?
Yeah, definitely. I know Hunters Hill a little bit. I used to live in Waverton a few years back now. Not lucky enough to be in Hunters Hill, but close enough to know it. And it's a beautiful area. And it's one of those areas where people move in and then they don't leave very often, do they?
Exactly. Yep. Once you're here, you don't want to leave.
No, that's exactly right. So opening your own office, was that a nerve-wracking decision? Did it just feel right? How did you come to that decision?
I think the fact that I had enough experience already, not just in real estate sales, but in other sales, it was the right timing. I like the fact that I can make all the decisions for how I want the business to be branded, how I want it to be run, the values, how we treat our clients. So I think it's definitely the right time.
Yeah, fantastic. And just in terms of getting established in Hunters Hill, you're obviously well known in the area with your family connections as well. But how are you getting traction in terms of getting appraisals and listings? What kind of strategies are you employing?
You get appraisals from everywhere and sometimes it's not where you expect. I do get them from the school gate because I've got children at local schools here. I do get them through my parents because they've got such long-standing connections and they're really involved in the community. They're involved in Hunters Hill Rotary and the RSLX sub-branch. So there's all these things that they're included in and really ingrained in, and that helps. But then also I sell for a lot of people that I've never met before, and I go in like every other agent and they pick me and they didn't know me from a bar of soap.
Okay, so what do you think makes them pick you? What makes you different to, I guess, another agent that's there buying for the business?
I think they know that I know the area inside out. There's not a street that I don't know. I know a lot of the history of the houses that I walk into. So I think that's a big part of it. I think there's not a lot of female agents, and females bring a real sensitivity if it's a divorce or a deceased estate. Not to say that men can't, but you know, there's a lot less women in real estate than there are men. So I think there's just a few different factors like that. And then it just comes down to just feeling comfortable with someone. Usually someone's property is their biggest asset or one of their biggest assets. So it's a big decision.
Often it's the biggest decision people make.
Yeah, and they don't do it every day. They might only do it twice in their whole life.
I was going to say, how many times have I done it? We've sold twice. And yeah, incredibly nerve-wracking, even though I work with agents sort of alongside them every day. So yeah, it's definitely nerve-wracking for people. How do you kind of, I guess, when you're getting those appraisals and those listings where you don't know someone, initially at least, how are you getting your foot in the door? Are you cold calling? Are you letterbox dropping?
I think it's a mix of everything. I think I certainly have thrown money at marketing. And sometimes you don't know if it's someone's an older person, they do look in the letterbox. If they're younger, they're on their phone looking at a Facebook ad. So you've really got to sort of put it out everywhere and it'll come back where you least expect it. And sometimes it might be from Facebook or social media, or it might be from letterbox drop, or it might be from just talking to someone at the supermarket, like you said earlier. It could just be a hole. You never know where it's going to come from. But if you put enough feelers out there, it'll come back.
Yeah, amazing. Now, one of the things that I have read about you is about your strong connections in China and helping Chinese buyers, but other international buyers as well, purchase in the Australian market. How are you making those connections and how are you leading them to properties here?
Well, I spent 4 years in China and I spent a year studying full-time Mandarin, written and script. So I was fortunate enough to make a lot of Chinese friends and connections, and I did go to a lot of events and things like that in Beijing. So I got a really good database of people, if you want to call it a database or a black book or just phone numbers in your phone of people that were always saying to me, we want to move to Australia or we want to buy property in Australia. And so I kept up those relationships, which has been really useful. And I think the fact that I learned the language, they don't expect to see a blonde Anglo-Saxon woman at the open homes when they're talking in Mandarin, sort of say something and they go, oh my God, she understood what we said about the property. So I think also having lived in China as well, it's not just understanding the language, but it's having a deep understanding of the culture. And the only way you can get that is by living in Asia and really ingraining yourself in the community. And we all come from different cultures. We all negotiate in a different way. We all trust each other in a different way. So having that real deep understanding of how Chinese people do purchase property from a psychological point of view, from just a negotiation point of view, there's a whole lot of things around saving face. I think that really helps. So I've got Chinese vendors and I've got Chinese buyers.
Yeah, amazing. So I was going to ask you actually, what are some of the cultural sensitivities you have to be aware of? And also, you know, how is negotiating with international buyers a bit different?
One of the main things with Chinese buyers is trust. And they always look at things from a very long-standing relationship. And that takes time. And if you do the wrong thing, well, then the relationship's done and dusted. But if you do the right thing, it's there forever.
Yeah, amazing. And I guess what are international buyers, whether they're Chinese or another nationality, what are they looking for in property over here? Is there a type of house or a particular suburb? What are they after?
Look, everyone's got a different budget and not everyone's got the same budget. But I think for them, they like to be near shops. They like to be near transport. They like to be near the city. And so somewhere like Hunters Hill ticks a lot of those boxes.
Yeah. Are you selling property in any other suburbs as well, or just mostly focusing on Hunters Hill there?
Well, we have Hunters Hill, Woolwich, Gladesville, right through to Putney. So it's that real peninsula which follows the waterway. And so there's quite a few suburbs along there. Now, some of them are smaller than others, but Hunters Hill, Gladesville, Putney are the bigger suburbs in those patches. And I cover all of those and have agents that will help me cover those as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
You can't do it all on your own.
No, you'd definitely be incredibly tired trying to do it all on your own. And we'll get to your team, et cetera, in a moment. But I did want to ask you, just still on the international buyers, is there a particular type of property that they're in general looking for, or does it vary?
It just depends. It does vary. There's people that are looking for investments. There are people that are looking for development sites. There are people that are looking for low maintenance villas, for example, because they've got older parents that aren't living with them, but they don't want stairs. On the whole, but we know that with Chinese buyers, a lot of the in-laws do live with them later in life. So they do need, for example, a bathroom downstairs, which is not the bathroom that all the guests use. It's a separate bathroom or an ensuite with a bedroom downstairs. Because if you've got aging parents, you can't have them going upstairs every night. And you also want some level of privacy too.
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely fascinating because obviously a lot of international buyers do come to Australia. They love what we have to offer. To the agents that are perhaps thinking about trying to head in that direction and cater more to that market, what would your advice be on how to get started and the key things you need to do?
I think just manners, to be honest, and patience, because English isn't their first language. So just always keeping that in mind and just, yeah, not treating them any differently.
Yep. Or people could study Mandarin.
They could study Mandarin. Trust me, it's not easy. And it doesn't sound nearly as good as French.
No. Look, I lived in Singapore for 6 months and Mandarin was very difficult to learn. I think I only remember one word and I'm not going to say it, but I learned to say thank you. I figured that was the most important word to learn.
Yes, that would be, yeah.
So you've got a new agency just started. Who's there with you? Who's in your team?
Yeah, so I'm fortunate to have some really good dynamic young people already. So I've got Madison, Thomas, Fiona. I've got a great mortgage broker as well, Craig, and we're just going to grow.
And are they selling agents along with you? Obviously, the mortgage broker is the mortgage broker, but yeah, the others are selling agents.
No, a lot of the back-end admin marketing social media is being done by them. And then it's just a matter of just recruiting good people that want to come along the journey.
Yeah. How do you choose good people? What are you looking for?
Oh, look, I think if you're going to be in real estate, it's not an easy game. I mean, I remember people saying, oh, all you do is stand at front doors in fancy houses and hand out brochures. It's nothing like that. It's a lot of calling. It's a lot of follow-ups, buyer follow-ups on properties. So you really have to have work ethic and you have to be resilient and have a thick skin.
Yeah, for sure. It's not an easy profession and I take my hat off to all of you every day multiple times. So in terms of choosing another team member, what characteristics do you look for in a new hire, in a new agent?
It's a commission-based industry. So whilst you might be on a salary, really at the end of the day, you're going to make good money if you can make good commissions. And to make good commissions, you've got to have work ethic. And it's a long game, real estate. It takes time for people to trust you, to call you in, to even pitch on their property. And you might have to speak to that person over a period of a couple of years, and it might be 25 times. And maybe it's they get your letterbox dropped and then they get an email from you and they come to one of your open homes and the list just goes on and on and on. But over that time, they begin to feel comfortable with you and trust builds up. And if you've given them good service, there's a good chance that you'll get in the door to list their property.
And I think work ethic and the right attitude is something that's not really teachable. You might be able to teach negotiation skills, but having that get up and go and being able to keep going when the going gets tough, excuse the pun, but you can't really teach that, can you?
No, it's a bit like you can't teach personality. You've either got it or you don't. And you've either got get up and go or you don't.
Yeah. So with your business, how much are you hoping to grow? Do you have a target for the next 12 months or is it more about seeing what the right fit is as you go?
Look, I think you can put targets in the first couple of years in a real estate in business, whether that's $1 million a year or pick a number out of the sky, depending on a whole lot of algorithms around how many properties you're going to prospect and get in the door and a number of appraisals. And you can put all these numbers around it. But at the end of the day, I think you're better off to just build it slowly and take your time and get the right people on board rather than just rush everything and make mistakes and then pay for it down the track.
Yeah, it's almost like you only really get one shot at it, don't you?
Yeah.
I wanted to pick your marketing brain as well, because obviously you've done a lot of marketing in real estate now, but previously with your other professions. What kind of marketing is really getting you traction at the moment?
I think from a marketing point of view, and real estate's a very process-driven industry. So the more newsletters you get and the more open home alerts and the more notifications and just listed and just sold, all those different forms of marketing, they all help. And I think you've got to do a bit of everything and then you'll know what's working. And then you can spend more money on the things that are working and then stop spending money on the things that aren't.
What's working for you right now?
I think social media is a big thing and everyone could always do more of it. I'm also conscious of the fact that you don't want people to get sick of you either. So it's a fine line, but you do need to talk about results. So you need to promote your results and you need to keep that top of mind in buyers' and sellers' minds, more predominantly sellers than buyers. But one day your buyers become sellers. So
yeah. And you mentioned then just the fine line between having enough marketing out there and too much. How do you gauge what's too much and what's not?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think if you look at other people's social media and you feel like you're getting sick of them and you see how much they're putting out there, that's probably a good indication.
I do follow a lot of agents on social media. It is good fun. And I guess in terms of the type of marketing content and on socials, you mentioned you need to show your results. Is there anything else that you're doing at the moment that's working? You'll see people do a little video. Here I am at my favorite coffee shop in Hunters Hill. Or are you doing any kind of that type of marketing?
I'm not doing that really, to be honest. I probably could, but I just sort of think rather than sit there at the coffee shop with your phone, taking a video of yourself, just talk to people in the queue.
Yeah, good idea. And I mean, that was literally an example I just made up, but you do see it. So yeah, oh, incredible. And well, I mean, I just mentioned the Hunters Hill coffee shop, so it's kind of a nice segue into you do a lot of work in the community outside of real estate. I know you're with a few local clubs and societies. I think the Hunters Hill Trust and the Historical Society. So tell me about those and why you want to be involved in them.
I think it's really important to support, for example, like you just mentioned, Hunters Hill Trust, Hunters Hill Historical Society, because that's what brought my great grandparents and my grandparents to Hunters Hill was the fact that I think one of the first properties they purchased was the oldest historic house on the Lenco foreshore.
And oh, wow.
We are starting to lose some of those houses. So it's important that, you know, there's some people that are very passionate in this area about retaining some of the history of the area because that's what makes it so beautiful and unique and attractive.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you obviously do those type of community things because you're passionate about them, but does it help you business-wise?
Good question. I don't know, to be honest, but I think, again, it goes back to just talking to people in the community. It's more opportunities to connect with people, catch up with them, whether it's socially. You don't necessarily talking about real estate, but again, it just comes back to the more times that you engage with someone, the better the relationship and the more they're going to trust you and like you, hopefully.
Yeah, I guess, you know, in a few years' time, you might be able to answer that question differently and go,
The other thing was I was already part of those anyway. Mm-hmm. So regardless of if I was in real estate or not, I would have been part of those.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I did want to ask you about is a charity you've been involved in, which is the Women's Plans Foundation. So can you just tell me a little bit about what that does and why you became involved?
Yeah, so there's a lady in Hunters Hill that started that up 25 years ago. I met her at a function in the eastern suburbs and we just connected about her charity that she'd formed because it's family planning and education around contraception and how to space your family out in for people in third world countries. So we had a fabulous function last night. We had speakers from the various charities that we support. And what they do is they go into communities in Cambodia and Vietnam and Thailand and Papua New Guinea. And they've got teams that go in there on the ground and just educate women about spacing out their families so they can afford to have children and they can afford to feed them and hopefully maybe even educate them as well. So Women's Plans Foundation fundraisers for those charities to go in on the ground in those countries. And I just felt that if you can help women space out their families, they're going to have a better quality of life. Their children are going to have a better quality of life. And the other thing is indirectly with climate change, if you reduce the number of people on the planet, the climate's also going to improve as well indirectly.
Yeah, they're both really important things for us to consider. And I think in Australia, we're a bit removed and we take the way we have things for granted sometimes. So I think that's really important work that you're helping out with.
One of the speakers last night was talking about how Women's Plans Foundation had funded a boat for a really remote area in one of those countries I was just talking about. And so it just meant that the family planning team could actually reach these communities because they're so far down the river. If you don't have a boat, you can't even reach them.
Yeah, it's not something you think about hearing. You would automatically think, oh, why a boat? But that makes sense. And yeah, they definitely need a lot of assistance, and good on you for helping provide that. And look, we just mentioned, okay, family, you have one yourself. You've got a couple of kids, I think, we were chatting about earlier.
I've got two kids, a Labrador and a husband. Yes. Sometimes a Labrador's the favourite. Yeah.
Well, I've got one child, one husband, two dogs and a cat that's sitting right here.
Yeah. It's nice having your pet when you're working from home.
It is. But how do you manage the juggle? Is work-life balance a thing, or is it more, my boss uses a great example of tilting. She says you can't ever be sort of completely balanced. You either tilt towards work or tilt towards family. How do you cope with everything?
Well, I made a promise to my family when I bought Rain and Horn Hunters Hill that if I put them to the back burner and work becomes an obsession and I'm not putting them first, well, then we give the whole thing away. So that was always family first. It is a juggle. And I think if you don't want to miss those important things during the week, well, it just means that you're going to have to spread your work over a 7-day as opposed to a 5-day because you don't want to miss out on those important family things. And so sometimes I just accept that on a Sunday, you've got to play catch-ups.
But I guess at least having your own business, if you want to go to the Friday morning school assembly, you've got that option.
Exactly, 100%. And for me, that was really important. I didn't want someone saying, I can't, you know, have a boss that says you can't be at this because work's more important.
Yeah, definitely. And the kids are going to keep you honest if you, you've made the deal now.
They're good negotiators.
Yes. And Emma, look, what's on the horizon? What are your goals for the next 12 months?
I think just help as many people as we can sell their properties at a fabulous price, but make it as stress-free as possible. It's never going to be stress-free, but just really minimize it. I've got a couple of deceased estates at the moment. So just working with all the siblings in the family, making sure everyone's on the same page, everyone feels part of the journey. And then from a family point of view, just like you were saying, just book in lots of short, maybe their weekends away for 2 or 3 days. They don't have to be long holidays, but just some really nice family breaks.
Yeah, it's important to take a break too, because yes, you know, you're incredibly busy, but you've come back feeling recharged and probably get on top of more things than had you not taken the break.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Yeah, you have to learn to switch off. And if you don't take those breaks, you don't. Real estate's 24/7. People call you all day long. They call you on a Sunday. They call you late at night. They text you at 6 a.m. It's just the way of the world now.
How do you de-stress? What do you do to chill out a bit?
I think my dog will come to the office with me and she'll look at me and be like, when are you taking me for a walk? So, you know, sometimes you've been on the phone all day and you just think, I'm going to take this poor dog around the block, take for a walk and have a break and get a coffee and chat to a few people and just to break up the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then just time with my family, you know, whether it's go and watch them play sport or, like you said, go and watch them perform at a school concert or an assembly, and just trying to also catch up with girlfriends.
That's a big one for me. That yeah. certainly fills my cup, catch up with the girls.
Yeah, 100%, which I'm not good enough at, but yeah, we've all got something to work on.
Definitely. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to get to know you. I'm sure you're going to be doing great things in Hunters Hill. Just one last question. What would your final piece of advice or message be to people to take home with them from listening today?
It's important to be part of a good brand. And I had worked with Rain and Horn before I took on this business, Rain and Horn Hunters Hill. And I think that the leadership team there are just amazing. I've got a great network manager. They've got fabulous digital technology, which I don't even understand, but you know, someone does it for me. And it really promotes properties to the best of its ability, gets it out there on social media. So just being behind a really good brand with good people. So if you need anything, they're there for you. That's a really key thing.
So find the tribe that's right for you.
Yep, because otherwise you can feel like you're on your own as a small business.
Well, thank you very much once again, and I'll let you go. But yeah, Emma, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Kylie, for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.